Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
I also would like to point out the big picture, which is that last June he went into treatment. Sounds like you did an intervention where he woke up in the emergency room or somewhere when he was passed out. So you've been doing a lot of work for a lot of years. And he now had a period of sobriety on and off, period of abstinence on and off. As you mentioned in module one, we have a graph where you show these early attempts at abstinence, which often do fail. We don't have sufficient support. We're not willing to take this. We're not willing to do that. You know, I don't need it. I can handle it. I'm going to be fine. And then you're not. And so you need to learn that. I can't do it alone. Next time I'm going to have to try taking the Suboxone. So whatever it is, it's a period of learning. And what you've done is you stay out of the way, as you have done. You've learned not to just recoil, but to strategically back away when he is using, and to step in and stay in his life and stay connected when he's not using. And what you have is a man who, given the natural course of his life, he should be drinking more. It's progressive. Things should be getting worse. You know, this is where you're losing the job. You're unable to work. You're unable to keep your clients, whatever it is, right? So things start getting very serious as you get older. This gets old and more chronic, and it is progressive. But rather than it be going up, you're telling us it's going down. He went into treatment last June. He just had 2 months. He may have messed up, but chances are he's on this slide down where he is learning how to be in recovery. And it's rough and it's unequal and it's terrorizing. And you've got kids, and I know your smallest kid is small. And I would like to hear a few minutes about how you manage children with him. But I just want to remind you that it's been a process of discovery. It's been a process of looking at yourself. It's with somebody you don't have daily contact with, so you do what you can. And it's just amazing to listen to someone who has truly sort of integrated with such insight the basic principles of this program of CRAFT through Allies. But do tell us a little bit about the children.
Yes. That's a whole other category and certainly involves rewarding and not rewarding, but you can't just take them away from the parent when you want to remove a reward, you know, because there's laws and we had shared custody. And so the law said that he had them for 50% of the time. And so you got to dance with that as well. Because of my own ignorance around, I guess, you know, SUD in general at the time, and also because of positive things, wanting to give him a chance, wanting the girls to have him in their lives, I thought it would probably be more because he hadn't been so present when we were together. I did agree to this 50%, 50-50 shared custody. It proved to be really tough for them. And at times really tough for me because they would pretty much get in touch with me when things got really bad and or when they were scared and or when there were some violent tendencies, you know, big yelling and things like that. So at that point, there's a lot going on in my head. There's a real attempt to sift out what's real danger, what's imminent danger, what is more them not playing with me, but maybe looking for a reaction, maybe looking for me to somehow wave a magic wand and fix the situation. There's so much. There's, you know, me feeling terribly angry with him for abusing that relationship, that role of power that an adult has over children. So much. There were times when I clearly saw that I was not always a witness to the actual moments of using or bad using. But if and when I was, I kind of enforced quote unquote natural consequences in the sense that I would kind of whisk the girls away, and not in a punitive way, or at least I didn't want it to come off that way, and tried to keep it real, my explanations real brief, and say, you know, you're not yourself right now. Let's talk tomorrow. The girls can stay with me tonight, that kind of thing. Or sometimes when they were not nearby with him, they were maybe an hour or two away. Sometimes it was trying to possibly enlist a family member to intervene and check on the girls and make sure that they were okay, and look in on him and see if he was okay. And so that's kind of, yeah, looking back to that period where we were split up and where he was kind of spinning out of control and I was learning craft and starting to be able to see through that filter. But as far as the previous chapters, when we were together and he was using, the using was a lot less problematic in a direct way for the children. It was more because he hadn't spun out of control. It was just this increasing, gradual increasing drinking, you know, very much self-medicating for different purposes to deal with anxiety, to deal with kind of psychic pain and distress and kind of, I don't know, escape situations that were very uncomfortable to him. The girls did not realize what was going on. And that's also based on their age and the fact that it was so gradual and that there wasn't, and that I was kind of always there to protect them, to be there when they needed someone. So they were very much unaware of what was going on. And I, and retrospectively now, I know that I was protecting them from his substance use. And I'd love to hear what you guys think about that phenomenon and just kind of sparing. They weren't naturally getting many negative effects from his drinking. And they were 9 and 11, I think, when we split up. So I didn't see the use of really letting them in on what was going on, but they found out quickly when we split up, for sure, because, yeah, for many reasons. But in a way, I was playing his game of the secret using, the hiding in the garage, drinking. You know, he had chosen to make it this really private, secret behavior that his family took years to understand what was actually going on. So long, about 10 years, actually, after we even split up. But I guess, you know, when I think back to it, I was kind of hush-hush about it. I was nagging him all the time. But as far as the rest of the world and as far as even our kids, I was playing into that. Not hiding, I don't know, secrecy, not shame, but I guess not knowing how to expose it in a nonviolent way and, you know, shed a little bit of light, just kind of pull the shades and let the light in and let people see.
You used the word protection in this case. It's protection. That's part of the dynamic that we get into is protection.
I actually think it's an illusion of protection because I do think kids pick up on something's going on and eventually it's going to come out. And I see lots of families that say the same thing. It's very hush-hush. They feel like they're protecting. So they're pulling away and hiding this particular thing that's happening. But I often say or recommend or suggest to whichever partner we're talking about, because I've also had lots of husbands that come into the room and it's the wife that is struggling. But I will often say, I adamantly believe that you should get your kids into some form of counseling and treatment and open up that discussion nice and early about like what addiction is and what's actually going on here. And I really strongly believe the longer that the addiction is hidden in a secret, the longer the process towards recovery, that it's this. Everybody's holding down the ranks and keeping it as quiet as possible with the idea. It totally is because you love your kids and you're trying to protect them, but it actually can do a little bit of harm and it can prolong the problem. And I also, I mean, there is a lot involved there because you also have to take into account, like, what's age appropriate? How do you talk to your kids about addiction in an age appropriate way? And as things get more complicated and complex, how do you address that with children? But I strongly, strongly believe that once you realize there is some kind of a problem with substance use, we got to get you more support. We got to get you into some form of support to help you focus and deal with this. Honestly, moms, dads, when you're dealing with kids, you don't know what to do when you're in the middle of it. You really don't. It's complicated. As Isabella's talked about, how learning to take care of yourself is, like, that's complicated. How do you take care of these kids and get them the best help that they need? And thinking that, well, the best thing to do is to just keep it quiet and keep it secret.
But I think if you look at the dynamic of all of this, we're looking at what is old and familiar. Also, we all have to look at where we come from. Do you come from a family that doesn't talk about things? Is that part of the dynamic of the relationship? So all of the work that we're talking about, really, what we're asking you to do is sit down and start to look at it and take things apart. Like Laura used the word complicated. I completely believe that everybody's complicated and we're all complicated. So the gift of this process is taking things apart. So it's like, okay, denial is about, I don't have a problem, or there isn't a problem, or nobody knows about this, or I don't have to do anything. And when I said the word protection, I mean, that's the impetus behind it, not necessarily the outcome. You know, it's like, that's why you do it. It's like, oh, I'm going to protect them. And I feel like if we take every word that we ordinarily use and flip it, like, what does protection actually mean? And, you know, you break it down. It's like protection means actually keeping somebody safe. And I personally believe that the more somebody has to work with, the more knowledge they have, the more access to their feelings, the more they could speak the truth, and the more there's room for truth, the more safe everybody feels. Because then you don't feel alone, you don't feel isolated, you don't feel like you're crazy, you don't feel like you're the one holding this great secret and nobody's talking about it. You know, like if you look at how most of us grew up, it's like there's these little secrets that everybody knew, but nobody talked about. And imagine being that kid where it's like, okay, this is actually happening, and let's talk about what we could do about this. And let's talk about what's going to actually help you feel safe. And clearly that was happening if your kids are calling you when they don't feel safe. So you were already doing all of that, but now it's like, we talk all the time about going from being unconscious, reactive, and automatic to conscious, having choices, being aware of what's going on, and then really being able to use this whole toolbox because you can think about it and see it and process it. And how great is it to be able to do that out loud with the people in your life? And so, you know, to me, by you even having communication with your kids, they're already in better shape than a lot of people are, because so many people don't talk about this. And by the way, I do also, you know, let's finish up the kid thing, but I want to talk about the balance because it's such a big deal when you're with a partner who's using.
Just want to point out that in the beginning of CRACT, if you come on our program, we talk about the difference between acceptable abuse and non-acceptable abuse. And we talk about physical violence as being a reason to not do CRACT. You will not come to this program first. You need domestic violence help. But of course, as Isabel and all of us are describing, there's yelling, there's abuse, verbal, there's hitting walls, there's throwing things across the room, not at you. That's an acceptable level of abuse to do this work, because none of you would be here if we ruled you out. So please understand that difference. We mentioned it in the beginning of the module. The first one, there's a whole module on safety. We mentioned again how to create safety in your family. I just wanted to say that we now have 10 minutes to work on balance.
Okay, I'm going to just list the concerns I have. Okay, so there's the financial piece. It's like, are you contributing what you're supposed to be contributing? Are you diverting funds for your use or not making any money so that you're not contributing? Are you taking care of the responsibilities of the home? Are you engaging, you know, in a way that you as the partner doesn't feel like you're operating by yourself? Are you taking on more because your partner's doing less? And then how do you deal with that? And what are reasonable expectations to have if that is happening?
Yeah, that's a biggie. And my own personal story on that is that my husband was a very high functioning alcoholic. That phrase just came out. I don't know even if that's how the phrase that is still used. I don't know if that's a good way to speak about it. But he was running a business. He was successfully running a business as the drinking was increasing. And even after his private life was kind of, and mental health was spinning out of control, he was kind of astonishing. I mean, I'm always astonished by people that can use quantities, you know, that would have other people, you know, knocked out and still run businesses and, I don't know, do surgery on people and whatever else they're doing. So I had the benefit, quote unquote, of him doing our finances, and he was the major breadwinner. He was working a lot. In fact, I think he was working way too much, and that was part of the problem that brought him to where he ended up. And at a job that he was kind of doing against his own real gut instincts and desires. So there was all that. And so it was really like, you know, there might have been a little bit of drinking in the day at lunchtime, but it was just, you know, a glass of wine or something like that, a beer, and then just work and work successfully. And then in the evenings, it was just, it started to be, became every evening, and then it was more and more every evening and weekends too. And so some of the stuff he was really contributing to more than me. As far as the kids, it really became my domain, because I think in any case, in his case, he just couldn't be there for anyone else for in a real way, because he was heading into this dark place and more. So it was little bits of time that he could be there for the kids. And I felt a real imbalance, an uncomfortable imbalance on that front for sure. And I was resentful for sure. And I just thought, like, I chose this guy who at the beginning was so great, and I just thought he would be a great dad. And here he is hiding out from his family in with work or with drinking. That imbalance really definitely brought up some resentment for me. And the imbalance that I mentioned previously about him being the breadwinner and him kind of being married to his work also gave him, in his mind, in any case, a lot of say in the decision-making of the family. And, you know, it was almost like proof all the time that he doesn't really have a problem. Look what I'm accomplishing in the daytime. Look at our bank account. All is well, you know, shut up, you know, stop bugging me and stop saying I have a problem, because everything's okay. And he was a bit of a neat freak, so he would also clean up. And yeah, so there's my laundry list is probably a lot shorter than a lot of people, because he was not one of those people. I think it happened later that, you know, when after we split up is when things got really bad for him, and unfortunately the girls had to be part of that terrible downward spiral. Yeah, when we were together, in any case, we had the imbalances that we were used to, and we each had some resentment around them. And I'm not sure how much the drinking really had to do with the imbalances.
I have this philosophy, and I've got no science to back it up, but this idea of a high-functioning person with substance use disorder, actually, I strongly believe that is more likely to lead to substance use disorder. Like you said, you know, he's drinking quantities that most people couldn't function even for 10 minutes, let alone run a business. And I strongly believe that, and I hear this all the time, when someone is high functioning and they're using substances, it's actually a detriment, because things don't fall apart earlier on in their use. And we had someone on here one time, this woman, Pam Ricard, from the Heron Project. And she talked about this, that she was high functioning. And for years, she was drinking. And of course, it wasn't until it became a problem. She used to run ultra marathons. And so she would, in her head, she would say, I couldn't possibly have alcohol use disorder. I couldn't possibly. Look at me. I run this big business. I do ultra marathons. I couldn't possibly have an addiction problem. And it isn't until it becomes a problem. And she got arrested eventually, and she gets put in jail because of drinking and driving, that she starts to realize she has an issue. But go ahead, Isabel.
I did want to come back for a second. I was just thinking about kind of the second chapter, if my story can, you know, be seen in that, in two chapters, the part where the girls are with their dad half the time. The feeling I got, which was really hard, and which I'm sure a lot of partners of loved ones with SUD can relate to, is like you're on call all the time, like you are the one to hold everything together, like the, you know, your children are counting on you to be there and to never falter and to never falter, to be the solid one, to be the anchor. And there's something flattering about that. And there's something nice about, you know, being attributed that role in a way, and that they trust you like that and they need you like that. But the pressure and just the fatigue of always have, you know, being on and always being on call and always needing to be ready to respond and help out because the other parent is just not able to be counted on right now, that does take a toll. And it's a relief, even though we're only in early recovery still, you know, to see him climbing out of that place where all the actual hard, gritty stuff is for me to deal with our kids, and where he's starting to try to be there a little bit more for them. But yeah, that role is not a hard one. It's not an easy one to incarnate. I don't know, that's not the right word, but to be in.
It sounds really difficult to deal with, and you may feel like the hero, but you don't want to be the hero kind of thing. But it sounds really a struggle to deal with. Kayla and Dominique, any more questions that you have for Isabel before we wrap this up?
Now, I just want to say that was so incredibly helpful. And I feel like you have these amazing insights, and you have me thinking about things differently. Like, one of the phrases that I'm walking away with is letting him feel the full weight of his choices. And I feel like that is such a very clear message of, you know, moving forward with this. And it's so helpful to hear the before and after and how you processed and where you're at now and how effective you've been, no matter how painful it's been. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And I would also add, thank you so much for taking on CRAFT and applying it, having the openness to take another look at your entire life through this lens of CRAFT. And for people that are listening, CRAFT is normally taught in 12 weeks. And then you're, as somebody just said to me, you're let go and you're let fly away. But obviously you need a lot more than 12 weeks. You need to really start looking at every facet, every domain, everything needs to be kind of turned over and looked at. And that takes time. And what you've shown us is your commitment and your ability to keep the principles sort of in front of you and look what's happening over time. I know it doesn't feel great if he used yesterday, but I'm sure he'll get back on the beam. I'm sure he will, because everybody's been let in. You are very clear. Your kids are clear. He's surrounded with a family that loves him. By the way, Isabel writes blogs for us, and so she has one over Christmas that I think resonates with a lot of people. We've had some good comments about actually having him with her family at Christmas and what that was like. So thanks again, Isabel. Really wonderful to hear this. Very useful.
And really, listeners, go and read Isabel's writing. Really insightful. It's fantastic. Really informative. So go read her blog posts. They're amazing. And I also want to say thank you so much, Isabel, for coming and sharing who you are as a person. And what I got and what I saw is someone who is incredibly compassionate and loving and a phenomenal mom who went through a very difficult time. And boy, you can still see the love and care inside of you. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you. Can I just say thank you to the three of you, because I wouldn't know craft nearly like I do if I hadn't been exposed to the three of you. I mean, it's not to say that people on the Allies site who don't work, you know, in direct contact with you won't get beautiful training, because you will. But I got to work with the three of you, and it's no coincidence that I understand craft backwards and forwards today. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.